Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for a solid hour of Tea Party Power. And now, here's Janine Garofalo's favorite tea-bagging redneck, Mark Gillar.
Welcome to the Tea Party Power Hour. I am Mark Gillar, and do we have a show for you today? Starting off, we're going to have S.E. Cupp, the author of Losing Our Religion, The Liberal Media's Attack on Christianity. Then we'll have Eric Rush, the author of Negrophilia, here to talk to us about recent events at the USDA, as well as with the Black Panthers. And then finally, we're going to have Susie Baruth, who is the head of a group that is counter-protesting the Westbury Baptist Church's efforts to disrupt military funerals. But first up, our guest is S.E. Cupp. She is a senior writer for the Daily Caller, as well as an online columnist for the New York Daily News. She is a regular on CNN, C-SPAN, Fox News, where she regularly appears on shows like Red Eye with Greg Garfield, Geraldo, and Sean Hannity. S.E., welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, no problem whatsoever. We are thrilled that you are here. Now, one of the things that I think amazes everyone about your new book is that you are, in fact, an atheist, correct?
That's true. I am. And, the book Losing Our Religion, The Liberal Media's Attack on Christianity is absolutely a defense of Christianity and Christian values. And I sort of make the argument that you shouldn't have to be a Christian to want to protect freedom of religion, freedom of speech, and, you know, the Judeo-Christian values that helped form the country.
Now, one of the things that I understand is that you came to the conclusion that you were an atheist at a very early age. Now, I can only imagine that you were a very precocious child. Something just tells me that you were. But at age 12, that seems a bit early for even you. How did you come to that conclusion at such an early age?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't call it a conclusion quite at 12. I wanted to be religious for a really long time through my childhood and tried very hard to be. I was sort of enamored of the ceremony and the ritual that, you know, going to church and being a religious person involved. But I couldn't ever wrap my head around the idea of some kind of supernatural power or some kind of order to the universe. And around 12, 13, I started really questioning and sort of distancing myself. And then into my teens, I spent a lot of time studying religion, you know, and different religions and trying to wrap my head around, you know, sort of philosophy of religion. And by 17 or 18, I was a pretty, you know, devout, if you will, atheist.
I like that, a devout atheist. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that's been said is that every, you know, innate to humans is the need to worship something. And uh-huh. people have said that the Holy Trinity for, you know, liberal progressives consists of abortion, evolution, and environmentalism, which now might be called global warming. You touch on all of those issues in your book. Why are these three issues so important to those who have who've been leading this attack on Christianity?
Well, yeah, I mean, they're sort of easy, you know. It's easy for the media, and you know, this book really focuses on the media. It's really easy for the media to go after these big, sweeping, emotional hot-button issues like gay marriage, abortion, global warming even, and environmentalism. Those are easy attacks. It's much harder to go after actual value systems. Liberals like to pretend that environmentalism is a value. It's not a value. It's a cause, and you know, a fleeting one. So it's, you know, it's a lot harder to go after value systems, and much easier to go after issues and causes and platforms, and that's generally what the liberal media does.
Now, the liberal media does seem to understand the importance of religion, especially when you're trying to get a candidate elected, and they seem to go out of their way in 2008 to portray Barack Obama as belonging to almost the perfect religion. Talk to us about that a little bit. Why, for the liberal media to have an attack on Christianity but then seemingly embrace it with regard to Barack Obama during the election seems like a contradiction.
Yeah, I mean, the liberal media uses religion, I think, very sort of, you know, it's a manipulation. They'll use it to humanize the left and demonize the right. And you saw this articulated perfectly during the 2008 election when they used Christianity to demonize someone like Sarah Palin and humanize someone like Barack Obama, all the while ignoring reality, you know, calling Sarah Palin's Pentecostalism creepy and kooky and crazy is actually ignoring the fact that it's a very broad-based Christianity. You know, they had her speaking in tongues and cavorting with witch doctors, none of which happened. Meanwhile, Barack Obama's black liberation theology is actually quite radical and progressive. But for the liberal media, they really sort of, you know, watered it down to make him sound like an everyman, to make him sound like a spiritual thinker. It was a really dishonest, intellectually dishonest approach to covering those two candidates.
Well, the thing about Sarah Palin is I think they had a clip where she went on stage when they had a visiting pastor, and the pastor mentioned the word witchcraft as he placed his hands on Sarah Palin. And my gut feeling was she had no idea what he was about to say. He just threw that in. It was hardly Sarah Palin endorsing witchcraft or witchcraft being a part of her faith.
Well, even if she did know what was about to happen, I mean, what is wrong with acknowledging or tolerating the Christianity of someone else and his version of Christianity? You know, he has different practices and rituals than hers. But again, the liberal media was not out to tell the truth. The liberal media was out to tell a story. And the story was that she was crazy and she was scary and Barack Obama was normal and enlightened. And so anything they could grab onto. I mean, I remember when, you know, treated that story of Sarah Palin praying for our troops like it was some kind of smoking gun. Like, okay, we've got her now. As if that is somehow unprecedented, if not, or something that was going to scare the public. It didn't. The liberal media was and is really out of touch when it comes to reporting religion, especially Christianity in this country.
Now, is that a reference to the Gibson interview where he said that Sarah Palin said the Iraq war was a mission from God, when what she'd actually said is we must pray if we go on this mission that it is a mission from God?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, a lot of news outlets covered it, but it was taken from a speech that she made at, you know, one of her churches, in which she was praying for our soldiers that they return safely, that they're on a path from God. And, yeah, the liberal media pounced on this and treated it like it was some kind of gaffe, when, in fact, every president who's presided over a war has said similar things. But, you know, it didn't matter for the liberal media. They were going to use any gotcha they could, even if they had to completely fabricate one.
Well, and that was exactly the case when Charles Gibson said that Sarah Palin, he quoted her as saying that the Iraq war was a mission from God, and then the tape came out showing that that was not what she said. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't recall Charlie Gibson going on air before his retirement and apologizing for getting that quote wrong.
No, there hasn't been any sort of acknowledgement of the inaccuracies and, you know, sloppy reporting, the bias of that election since. And you're seeing now with these revelations of you know, through journalists, that there was a concerted effort to tell this story in a certain way, where reporters got together and said, okay, how are we going to handle the Reverend Wright issue? Well, we'll just call people racists. And how are we going to handle Sarah Palin? Well, we'll just call people sexists. I mean, this was, you know, a conspiracy, essentially, where journalists from different outlets got together and decided this is how we're going to tell these stories. I mean, any denial of that is absurd at this point.
Oh, sure. And I think it's great that we finally have confirmation that the liberal media does get together in advance and conspire, and that false accusations of racism is one of their tools, apparently. Now, one of the things we want to point out about your book is that when you say the liberal media's attack, you're not just talking about the news media. You're talking about people like Bill Maher. You're talking about The View. You're talking about people that put on the programs. I mean, it's the entire media that you're discussing. in this book, correct?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that the more interesting analysis is of reporters, but it's hard to ignore the pundits. And, you know, they're allowed to have their opinions. I'm not arguing against that or for any kind of censorship as a pundit myself. I mean, I like being able to say my opinions. But to pretend that someone like Bill Maher, for example, or Keith Olbermann, to pretend that their views are mainstream is a lie. They're not mainstream. They are alternative. They are subculture. They are counterculture. They're fringe. And they should be labeled as such. And even when you're an opinion writer or a pundit, you should still take care, I think, to tell the truth. And many of these people didn't, especially during the 2008 election.
One of the things that's difficult in arguing this with liberals, and I actually caught part of your interview with the Young Turk on YouTube, is that you can't even get these people to acknowledge that there is a liberal media, let alone that the liberal media is attacking Christianity. I mean, they're like, what liberal media? What are you talking about?
Yeah, I mean, people like that are really, I think, are really, how do I want to say, in the minority. I usually talk to liberal pundits and liberal journalists, liberal opinion writers who willingly and readily admit that the liberal media is both liberal and biased and secular. But occasionally you do get these guys who seem like they're, you know, they're living on Mars, where they actually believe that the media is conservative and, you know, biased to the right. And you just, there's no arguing with those people because you can't, it's like trying to tell them, you know, the sky is blue when they think it's green. It's just impossible. But honestly, most people I meet on the left willingly, readily admit that the media is a liberal place. And, you know, I've worked in newspapers and magazines and television and radio, and I've certainly seen firsthand it's a liberal place. And it's kind of unspoken. I mean, you don't really have to debate it except with these random, weird folks on the left who still live in a bubble.
Gotcha. Now, one of the things you point out in the book is that the liberal media basically equates Christianity with stupidity. I mean, these are just people who aren't intellectual enough to see the light that there is no God.
Yeah, I mean, there's two tacks when it comes to Christianity and the media. One is to paint them all as hicks, as stupid, rude, unsophisticated. They're uncultured. They're backwoods. And the other is to paint them as dangerous and fanatical. There's very little nuance on the left when it comes to Christianity. No one is actually talking about the average church-going middle American. They only want to talk about the radical extremists and the sort of country bumpkins. And that's, you know, that is the whole of Christianity for the left. And it's, again, very intellectually dishonest.
It would seem so, and I'm curious as to how many of them actually believe what they're saying when they try to equate Christianity with stupidity, or how much of this is part of an organized plan to undermine Christianity in America. I mean, do these people actually believe that every single person who walks into a house of worship on Sunday is somehow intellectually inferior to the secular progressives? They do believe that.
Yes, they do. They believe it. I mean, this is, you know, liberalism since the Copernican Revolution, since the Enlightenment, since the Darwinian Revolution, has insisted very earnestly that the debate between faith and reason has been settled. It's over. Despite the fact that religion has inexplicably survived past Copernicus and Darwin and the Enlightenment, that has not changed their argument that the debate is solved. You see this when we talk about evolution. You know, that debate is solved, and creationism is, and intelligent design arguments are hooey to the left. You know, this negates the fact, of course, and undermines the fact that there are plenty of scientists who believe in God and plenty of religious people who believe in evolution. But that kind of nuance, again, is not something that the liberal media likes to acknowledge. It's just not convenient.
I think there are many people who are highly religious, and I've heard priests say this when approached by students who have that conflict of saying, well, I'm a biologist and I believe in evolution, but at the same time I believe in Christ. And one priest actually resolved it this way. He said, well, can you find it within you to believe that Christ created man through evolution? And the student
right.
said, of course. And then he said, well, then you don't have a problem.
Well, I mean, and that's so actually a very common belief that, you know, and that's part of the intelligent design creed. I mean, that's a popular belief that, sure, there's evolution, sure, there's science, but God has a hand in all of it. I mean, there's a lot of ways to look at this. Religion is a, you know, by design, very complicated and very hard to sum up in sound bites. But that's the liberal media's project, to sum it up in sound bites. So a lot of this gets completely lost.
Gotcha. Well, I want to thank you for being here today. I know you said you had very limited time. You're on a tight schedule. Very quickly, tell our listeners how they can get a hold of a copy of your book.
Sure. Well, first, it was my pleasure, and thanks for having me. You can get the book, Losing Our Religion, on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. You can get it through my website, which is redsecup.com, and in bookstores near you.
Okay, and I also see on your website that you are participating in the Liberty Ship Cruise. Tell us a little bit about that and how people can get involved with that as well.
Yeah, that's in November. You can go to libertycruise.com, I believe, and sign up. It's going to be a whole bunch of us conservative pundits and personalities hanging out on a boat and doing fun events and making speeches and, you know, having a great time. And we hope that a lot of people want to come and join us.
So they can just go to redsecup.com and click on the Liberty Ship icon, and that will take them to the information they need to register. Fantastic.
That's it.
Once again, SE, thanks for being here today. We enjoyed having you.
Thanks for having me, guys. Bye.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye. Our next guest this morning is the man who broke the Jeremiah Wright story, Eric Rush. Eric, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Sorry, Eric, we had a little trouble bringing you on. Eric, this must have been a busy last 2 weeks for you between everything going on with the Black Panthers and with the Mrs. Sherrod case at the USDA. But first of all, let me just get your take on what happened with Ms. Sherrod at the USDA. There supposedly is a tape. It was her referencing an event that happened many years ago. The Obama administration, the USDA and the NAACP all seemed to rush to judgment, and she ended up resigning, and now they've had to hire her back because the whole thing seems like one big mistake. As the author of Negrophilia and as someone who has followed the media's treatment of African Americans carefully, what do you make of this?
Well, as a lot of people have postulated at this juncture, I think that the Obama administration and the NAACP have been somewhat concerned, despite their sort of negrophiliac sensibilities, so to speak, their bias towards blacks, which I've commented on. I think the Obama administration in particular were concerned that they were cultivating that sort of reputation, black bias, obviously. Obama and the Democrats are concerned about votes at this point, the polls being what they are, and they basically rushed to judgment. And I believe that the word to force her Ms. Sherrod's resignation came from the top. I believe that came from Obama, and that obviously it was a rush to judgment. She was grossly slighted, and of course now the damage control is, you know, coming down on the side of, and I don't know how this works, but it came down on the side of, you know, Breitbart, Fox News, and all of these racists conspiring against her or the NAACP or the administration or all three. So it's been really amusing in sort of a grim way.
Well, it's interesting. I can understand Breitbart being called out because it was his post on biggovernment.com that got the ball rolling on all of this. But when it comes to Fox News, the USDA had asked for her resignation, and the NAACP had publicly criticized her before the first bit of footage hit Fox News. So I think that maybe the blame Bush strategy has evolved into a blame Fox strategy for the administration.
Yeah, it definitely has. I mean, I think the modus operandi is sort of blame someone else who happens to be the most convenient. As far as Breitbart goes, you know, I think that he, as I heard someone say last night, he either made an honest mistake or a dishonest mistake. But the fact is, as some folks have pointed out as well, that leaving aside the fact that Ms. Sherrod was grossly slighted by the administration and the NAACP, and that the administration definitely did rush to judgment, and even if she may have had some sort of epiphany, as was described, if you look at the entire videotape of that speech before the NAACP people, it's pretty easy to tell from the things that have happened since we've seen microphones in front of Ms. Sherrod's face since then, that she pretty much does fall in line with that sort of racial orthodoxy that's been put forth by the hard left career activists and the NAACP and, you know, anyone who criticizes anyone who's black for any reason at all is a racist. Breitbart's a racist. Fox is a racist. You know, everyone's a racist. And I think that is the greater message that perhaps Breitbart was trying to get out. And, of course, that is the central message of, or one of the central messages of my book, Negrophilia.
You know, a long time ago, Ross Perot got into huge trouble, Eric, by using the term "you people" when addressing an African American audience. I find it interesting that no one is taking offense with the Miss Sherrod's use of the term "his own kind" when she discusses referring the white farmer to a white attorney. Now, that's not something that happened 24 years ago. That was her choice of words when delivering the speech to the NAACP. I don't even have to ask you. I mean, a lot of times when you and I have talked, I've said, what do you think would have happened to a Caucasian had they used a term like that? But we already know, because Ross Perot did it back when he ran for president, and he was nailed to a cross for saying "you people" while delivering a speech. So tell me, why hasn't anyone brought up the point? Well, I guess some have, but why hasn't the mainstream media taken issue with her use of the term "his own kind"?
Well, the mainstream media, or as I like to call them, the establishment press, they possess the same sort of sensibilities, this sort of hard left racial orthodoxy that has, you know, all of these double standards. I mean, there are really too many to list if you run down the events of the last couple of weeks whereby, you know, someone of color gets away with something, saying something, doing something that a white person would be essentially crucified, excoriated in the media for. But that is the standard operating procedure if you are working within the framework of this, you know, what I call negrophilia in the book, and that sort of, you know, establishes these double standards that the bar for speech is set higher for white people, the bar for action is set higher, which is really a racist sort of philosophy to start with, but of course we're not supposed to acknowledge that. The establishment press, they're on the left. They're, you know, they're part and parcel of all of this. When it comes down to the power players on the left, of course, it's not about race at all. It's about controlling us. And they've done it very well, in as much as both blacks and whites in different ways have been conditioned into this hypersensitivity, whereas discussions of race are concerned and certain actions, and we have that sort of, you know, acceptance of these double standards.
One other piece of that video that I personally found offensive is that whenever Ms. Sherrod was discussing the fact, and I think the exact quote is, "I didn't give him the full force of what I could do," it seemed to be met with applause and laughter from the NAACP crowd, which, unless I'm misjudging it, would seem to suggest that they think it's perfectly okay for someone to hold back the full force of what they can do to help a white farmer simply because they're white. I mean, did you pick up on that in the tape as well?
Absolutely. And that is because they think it's perfectly okay. You know, let whites suffer the ignominy of what we used to go through, and that's okay. Now, of course, that is antithetical to, you know, Dr. King's dream and the sort of framework within most Americans operate these days. But that is definitely true. That is the message that is put forth. That is what a lot of black people accept and have been encouraged to accept by the left and these career activists. It was pointed out by Mr. Breitbart and a few other, prominent conservative pundits over the last week that the reaction of the audience in that videotape is far more telling and far more significant than anything Ms. Sherrod said. So that was definitely something that needs, you know, I mean, that was really just background to a lot of people, but it really, to me, it was foreground, and to me, it was much more important.
Well, the head of the NAACP has been critical of the Tea Party movement, suggesting that the Tea Party movement needs to do a better job of policing racism within its ranks. Any word yet on whether the NAACP is going to make any effort to police the racism that was demonstrated in that room when Mrs. Sherrod spoke?
Well, of course not. They don't have to. They're black.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, that you have participated in Tea Parties, have you not, Eric?
Yes, I have.
And as an African-American man attending a Tea Party, have you been the victim of any racism whatsoever while attending one of these Tea Parties?
No, not at all. I was perfectly comfortable. I was just another face in the crowd. You know, I made friends there, hung out.
The
public, you know, what the establishment press is putting out about the Tea Parties is this pure propaganda, of course, you know, these things that they take out of context and misinterpret and go with things that might remotely be considered racism, and they put them all over the news. You know, I was at a Tea Party where people who had anti-Obama signs were asked to take them down. They were reminded that it wasn't that the Tea Party was not about Obama. It was about big government and spending, and those people didn't have a problem with that. It's you know, complete fabrication, this racism charge.
One of the things that I've found interesting is that it's hard for the left and the right to even agree in some instances what racism is. Going back to the Tea Parties for just a second, one of the things I've seen is that when you see a Tea Party person holding up a poster of Barack Obama portrayed as Hitler, there are people on the left who immediately say, "Look how racist that is." But I saw countless posters like that of George W. Bush during his 8 years. And people are also looking at a billboard that I think was put up by an Iowa chapter of the Tea Party, where he is pictured next to Hitler, and I can't or Mussolini on the other side. And that's being called, or that it was taken down quickly, but when it was up, it was called a racist sign. I find it interesting, and I'd like your take on this, that many of the things that were done to George Bush, you know, being compared to Hitler, having his intellect questioned, there were even numerous pictures on the internet, and I'm sure you saw them, where people tried to suggest that George W. Bush looked like a monkey. All of these things done to Bush perfectly okay with the left-stream media. But whenever some of these things were done to Barack Obama, all of a sudden everybody who engaged in that type of activity was in fact a hardcore racist. Now, the monkey thing I can understand, but the comparison to Hitler, I don't.
Well, the monkey thing might be considered insensitive, but that's an example of something that I think could be taken out of context. Using the adage "monkey see, monkey spend," someone could use that without any racist intentions whatsoever. But of course, you know, it's going to be taken as you're comparing him to a monkey because he's black, racist. Think about how many effigies of George W. Bush were hung during his administration. Imagine if some Tea Partiers did that with Barack Obama, hanging him in effigy. The firestorm that would ignite. The fact of the matter is that as far as the left goes, racism is what they say it is. Anyone who disagrees with, criticizes anyone who is black at all, particularly Obama, but it could be for their use a sports figure, a pop star, anything. If you're white, you criticize someone, you're racist. If you're black, you're a race traitor, an Uncle Tom, what have you. Mm-hmm. But the central message is it's what they say it is, which is why we're never going to agree on anything as far as race goes, or a lot of other things for that matter. Conservatives and progressives are not to agree, ever.
It seems like the flames of racism are being fanned right now by a lot of different groups for their own individual reasons, but the gentleman, Christian Adams, who resigned from the DOJ because he said the DOJ was not interested in pursuing civil rights cases where Caucasians were the victims, brought back all those videos of King Samir Shabazz waving his baton at the Philadelphia polling place, and this is probably without meaning to, given the new Black Panther Party renewed voice. I mean, we're seeing Malik Zulu Shabazz all over the press, making his racism charges against the Tea Party, complaining that white Tea Partiers, or at least white people, are buying up guns and ammunition in record number. And it seems to be a very, very divisive thing at a time when our country doesn't need to be divided anymore. What is your take on the new Black Panther Party, as well as what their motives might be for the activities they're engaging in right now?
Well, the power players in the new Black Panther Party, starting with Malik Zulu Shabazz, they are basically thugs who are looking for trouble, looking for notoriety. People like King Samir, these guys need to get real names, by the way.
Name is Martin Heath. His name is Martin Heath.
Yeah, well, of course. And, they're just hateful. I mean, they've been raised on this, you know, white people are genetically predisposed to oppress black people. Some of them believe it with all of their hearts. They've been misinterpreting everything that they see. All of their lives to racism. They've been listening to people like Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, Louis Farrakhan. As you probably well know, there are at least one, and Malik Zulu Shabazz might be one of them, that were actually kicked out of the Nation of Islam because they were their rhetoric in public.
That was Khalid Abdul Muhammad.
So yeah. These guys, you know, these guys have a very, you know, I mean, what can I say? They're dyed-in-the-wool racists. They're looking for power, notoriety. You know, a lot of these organizations, with the election of Barack Obama, have taken license to turn up the heat on what they've been doing. The Obama administration, which thrives on chaos, has not come down on the side of assuaging any of this. They want things to get worse. I mean, if this seems, you know, I
to what ultimate goal? To, To what ultimate goal, Eric? Why would they want things to get worse? I mean, when things get worse, that's not exactly a platform for re-election.
No, but it is a platform for things getting so bad that people turn to the government, that meaning the Obama administration, and say, help us, we'll do anything.
Okay.
This seems a little over the top. I realize that even to some conservatives, but if you look at the history of Barack Obama, what he has studied, what the people working around him have studied, what his mentors have studied and planned, and Bill Ayers and all of the rest of them, when you understand that, it really isn't very difficult at all to see why they're doing everything that they are doing through inaction or action. That seems as though, gee, you would almost think they're trying to make things worse. Well, they are.
So the goal would be chaos to the point where people begin screaming for the government to jump in and do something, with doing something perhaps meaning forming that civilian peacekeeping corps that he bragged about during the election?
Yes, absolutely. How about
maybe having an excuse for taking away guns from the American people?
Yes, how about massive hyperinflation, riots, the border with Mexico, you've got well-organized civilian militias shooting it out with drug lords and the Border Patrol and the National Guard. It looks like this whole constitutionalist, capitalist thing just doesn't work. We're going to need to try something else, and people are so scared that they're willing to go for it.
Let me ask you again to shed some light on what the Tea Party might be able to do to attract more African-American members and participants, because I've been to some Tea Parties and participation by African-Americans is very, very low, and it certainly isn't because the Tea Party wants to exclude African-Americans. You have argued, and I think very successfully argued, that the Jesse Jacksons and Al Sharptons of the world, whom you referred to as poverty pimps, have a vested interest, as do many white liberals, in holding African Americans back. I can assure you, conservatives, as you well know, we want everyone to have a piece of the American dream. We want everyone to succeed and take advantage of what America has to offer, and that certainly includes all races, including African Americans. And that's why when we talk about lowering taxes and creating an environment that facilitates business growth, we want that for all people. So why aren't more African Americans jumping on the Tea Party bandwagon?
Well, first of all, they are just not jumping on in as quickly as some of us might like it. And I've spoken to several prominent black conservatives who would really like to see it happening faster. But you know, I tell them you've got to realize a couple of things. Number one, proportionally, there's less black Americans than there are white ones. So, I mean, even if you get a whole, truckload in there, it's going to seem like their numbers are kind of scant. Secondly, there are a lot of black conservatives who are, they're scared. I mean, they're not scared of being conservatives. I mean, they get enough grief for that, but stepping out in public, which is something I've been trying to get them to do, and I hope that my book will help them do, you know, you get a lot of, you get enough grief just being a conservative, but, you know, to get out there and be in a public place and hang out with Tea Partiers and maybe get your face on TV, that's another story. In addition to which, I think that there might be some, not many, who are concerned that maybe, you know, they're going to run into some white supremacist groups that are peppered within the Tea Party ranks, because that's what the press has been saying.
I think what they would find would be just the opposite, that they would be welcomed with open arms, and that you would have Caucasian Tea Party members going out of their way to make them feel welcome, because as a Tea Partier, I can tell you I am disgusted by the racism accusations. The liberal media never ceases to amaze me. One example I'll share with you, Rush, I'd like to get your Eric, I'd like to get your feedback on, is I think by now we've all seen the Chris Matthews clip where he is saying that essentially he'll believe the Tea Party isn't racist whenever Tea Partiers reach out and grab those racist signs out of the hands of those who are waving them. First of all, I think Chris Matthews and I would disagree on what a racist sign is. I mean, I think, like you said, anybody that says Obama's having a bad hair day is a racist to people on the left. But also, with regard to Matthews, he was sitting 2 feet away from Dan Rather when Dan Rather said that Barack Obama couldn't sell watermelons if the state troopers flagged down the traffic for him. And to me, that was one of the most racist comments I have ever heard someone on television say. Chris Matthews was 2 feet away. Did he reach across and rip off Dan Rather's lapel mic? Did he say, "Dan, that's a racist comment, and I don't tolerate that kind of thing on my show. Get off my set." Did he do anything to call it out? No, he quickly interrupted Dan Rather to keep a cherished liberal broadcasting icon from making an even bigger ass out of himself. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on the double standard? My position is, the liberal media will take racist comments by the left and sweep them under the rug, and they will take innocent comments by the right and in a very reaching way try to accuse someone of racism or find racism where it doesn't exist. Am I off base with that?
No, I couldn't have put it better. I mean, that's the double standard. It's okay for them. They don't even – in some cases, maybe the majority thereof, they don't even realize that they're being racist. In my book, one of the points I make is I have experienced many more instances of what I would consider to be racism on the part of people who identify themselves as liberals or progressives than I ever did with anybody who identified themselves as a conservative. Now that I think about it, I really can't think of any overt or covert or unintentional acts of racism by anyone who was conservative. It has always been that sort of Harold Alford, Barbara Boxer kind of condescending, keep your place.
Oh yeah, you'd be proud. You should be proud. I mean, that yeah. Still echoes in my ears, Eric.
You've gotten this in our largesse, and you had better be grateful and keep your place.
You and I are about the same age. I don't know if you recall that there was once a show called Star Trek: Deep Space Nine. And in that show, there was a group called the Dominion that really didn't like to have to fight their own battles. So they found this warrior race. I don't know if it's coincident or not, but most of these warriors were played by African Americans. And they got them addicted to a drug called Tetracel White. And
yeah.
In that, yeah, and the reaction on the part of this race is that they worshipped the Dominion, and they were thankful to the Dominion for getting them addicted to this Tetracel White, or providing them with this Tetracel White, which of course the Dominion got them addicted to in the first place. I would argue that welfare is the real world Tetracel White for many African Americans, and of course there are many other races on welfare, but white liberals have intentionally held African Americans back and given them welfare, and rather than looking at these white liberals and seeing them as the enemy in what might be the largest case of Stockholm syndrome imaginable, African Americans seem to be thankful to these white liberals as if they're doing something good for them. And let's mention, of course, there are the Al Sharptons and Jesse Jacksons of the world as well who play a part in this. But do you think there's a possibility that welfare is the real world tetracell white?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, heaven help you if you try to suggest that maybe it's bad for them, or maybe the Dominion had, ulterior dishonorable motives for getting them hooked on it. I mean, they'll come after you worse than they will any of the targeted enemies, you know, of the Dominion. That is a really, really apt analogy. And I love Deep Space Nine, by the way.
Oh, okay. So you immediately knew what I was talking about. I was a little hesitant to bring that up. One, I instantaneously label myself as a geek. And two, it seems like most people aren't as familiar with that show as they are with the original Star Trek. Eric, we've run out of time, but I want to thank you again for being on the show. It is always very enlightening. Let me just say this. I applaud you for your courage. I know it's not easy to take the position that you've taken. I know that cast at you by the left and by African Americans in general. So thank you for having the courage, for standing up in what you believe in. And I think everyone out there needs to read your book. So before you go, please tell our listeners how they can get a hold of your book.
Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Borders, WorldNet Daily Superstore for autographed copies. And you can get to any of those places or any of the other links from my website, ericrush.com. That's ericrush.com.
Fantastic, and we'll put those links up on our website after the show. Eric, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much. You have a good one.
You too. I look forward to having you back again soon.
Sure, my pleasure.
Next up, my guest is Susie Baruth. Susie is participating in a group that counter-protests the Westbury Baptist Church's efforts to interrupt military funerals. Susie, welcome to the show.
Hi there. Thank you for having me.
Oh, an absolute pleasure. I am an admirer of the work you're doing. I don't know anyone who, after becoming familiar with the efforts of the Westbury Baptist Church, who wasn't immediately disgusted that a group would find it acceptable to disturb, disrupt, interfere with something as sacred as a funeral, and what that must do to the families of the deceased who are already in a very emotional state. But tell me a little bit, but before we dive into your efforts, tell us a little bit about the Westbury Baptist Church, because when I had a chance to talk with you the other day, you mentioned part of their activities, things that I wasn't familiar with. I think the perception on the part of the American people is that these guys show up and hold up a few signs. What is the motivation of the WBC? What are they all about? What types of things do they do to disrupt these military funerals?
Well, they believe that basically ever since Bush and Clinton decided that the don't ask, don't tell policy be enacted, that any soldier that joins the military is a faggot, quote unquote.
That's their words.
My words. That's their words, not mine at all. And so any military soldier is that, and anything that's happened after that has happened because of that. 9/11 happened because of it. Any terrorism act has happened because of it. Any government official that's been elected, any bad thing that's happened, basically God hates everybody and everything that's happened after that, the don't ask, don't tell, because if you do good, God will do good things for you. If you do bad, then God will do bad on you, and that's the way they believe. So it's not just military soldiers, anybody.
Okay, so the entire world has gone to hell in a handbasket because of don't ask, don't tell. That's their position.
Pretty much.
Wow.
Pretty much. And they protest, I mean, they protest everything, but we're most appalled at the soldiers because here they are at war and they are killed in action and they come home and they're protesting at their funeral and at the church. It starts at the church and, you know, because some don't actually get buried it starts at the church, and they go by First Amendment, okay? They have never, ever lost by a state law, even though a Senate might pass a bill and have a state law enacted. They've never lost by First Amendment. They'll win a case, but then they'll appeal it, and then they'll win, and they've gotten money that way. They just they have won so much money in these cases by state paychecks they've won, by private cases that families have lost by trying to sue them. And this is how they fund themselves. They intimidate vulnerable families with their statements in processions going to the funeral. They might say something that gets a family member riled up, and the family member takes action on the Westboro church member, and then they sue the family member, and that's how they fund themselves for the next funeral. This is how they work.
When you say gets the family member worked up, are you talking about that they cast provocative language at them until the family member loses it and takes a swing at them, or what are you saying?
Right. They don't break a law. Whatever the First Amendment law is, I believe it's 100 feet, 125 feet. I'm not exactly sure what the First Amendment rule is, but a state cannot overrule the First Amendment law, and that's what they go by, the First Amendment rule, and that's why the state can take them to court, but they've never won. They always appeal it. The Westboro Baptist Church will always appeal it, and they always win. Because the First Amendment rule will always overtake the state law. And I believe it's 125 feet. They will stand at that line and they will not cross it. They will talk. They will not, they will say nasty things. And the family member, or whether it be a member of the community, they'll say just the right thing to nab at their vulnerability. And, take action. The family member gets upset or a community member, and rightly so, and they might not take action right then. They might take them to court and try to sue them and win, and then the WBC will turn around and sue them back and win, and which has happened. So this is how they operate. This is how they fund themselves to the next funeral. However, we had a great turnout a few days ago. We had a wonderful turnout at a funeral. We had 1,300 to their 20 members, and now they've done 4 no-shows in a row. So we really had we really are intimidating them. So I don't know what to say about that. We're winning their battle.
Tell me about the 1,300-person turnout. I believe the Freedom Riders also participated in this.
Yeah, they're called the Patriot Guard Riders. We also have now you got me lost in the what the other one is called. Patriot Guard Riders are nationally known. They go to every single soldier's funeral. We, however, our cause, go to the ones that the WBC attend. We don't attend every single soldier's funeral. The Patriot Guard Riders will come by the masses. 200, 300 will show up at one funeral. And they come on motorcycles, and they rev their engines when these people try to say nasty things and they hold their flags up, which we hold flags up and we try to block their signs. And so the family cannot see the signs. They can't hear the chants because we'll either sing God Bless America or the national anthem. So the family can't hear the chanting or the things that they say. This is what we do, and the Patriot Guard riders do what they do. And all of this is to try to prevent the families from hearing what the WBC is trying to do.
So essentially, you're trying to protect the families at a very emotional time. Obviously, they've just lost a loved one who was serving his or her country. And we have these people that are chanting, and you said that they often use the word faggot. Give us some ideas of some of the other things they do. You mentioned that one of them wears this long trailing tail that is a U.S. flag and that their kids jump up and down on it. I found that
right.
Amazing.
Right. It's the wife of the husband is the preacher. And the wife wears the flag as a shirt, and it's a long coattail, almost like a tuxedo, only it's really long, and it drags along the back of her when she walks. And I believe it's her grandson. He's 10 years old. He stomps on it, and they get her for degradation of the flag. And they'll fine her. You know, they don't do any of this before or while the funeral's going on or while the church service is going on. They wait till after everything's done. Any law that they do break, say they don't get a permit for somewhere or anything that they do wrong, they'll fine them. But they usually have a small fee or either that or they'll appeal it and they'll throw it out. But, you know, it's such a small fee for stepping on the flag. Either the police won't even bother with it, or they'll pay the fee. But they do it, and it's just to get media attention. It's just to get people riled up. And I tell people when I talk to the leaders, and the leaders of the funerals that represent us as our cause at the funerals, I say, look, these people are not a church. They can't be a church. They're a cult. Just don't let them get to you. Just laugh at them. Just, like, don't even let it get under your skin. They're not real people. They're crazy people. Who would stomp on the flag? Who would yell these crazy things? They're not right in the head. Don't let it get to you. So don't let it intimidate you. And just think about why we're there and protect the family. And
well,
try to pass that on to Yes,
I was going to say, speaking of intimidation, it sounds like your group has intimidated the WBC, the Westbury Baptist Church, because you said after 1,300 people showed up at one particular counter-protest and the Freedom Riders were there, the Patriot Riders were there as well, they've no-showed their last four funerals. This sounds like a time when we need to get as many people involved with your organization as possible, because it seems like you're very, very, very close to winning the war. We have only a little time left, about a minute and a half. Can you tell my listeners what they can do to become part of your organization, how they can see where the Westbury Baptist Church is going to show up next, and what they can do to become involved with your movement?
I sure can. I can tell you that right now we're at 1,172,786, and we're growing like a fire. What you need to do is, and I'm going to spell my name, you need to go to Facebook and go to my homepage. You need to spell out my name, S-U-S-I-E, and my last name, B-A-R-U-T-H. Once you get to my page, ask me to be your friend, my friend. I'll approve you, and when you get to my my homepage, look under causes. And on the left-hand side, you're going to see our name, which is United Protectors of Fallen Soldiers. And when you click on that, you're going to come to our page. And I believe it says either join or invite. I believe it says join, and that's how you can join. And you will get all the bulletins that I send out or my administrator sends out. And this will have updates and all the funerals that are listed in any state. And if they want to go attend or be a leader, they can do that. Also, on my page, on the left-hand side, on the site, you cannot see the logo. It's very important that they see and read the logo. Facebook is way behind the power curve when it comes to web designing. And on the site, you can't read the logo, okay? And our mission statement is on there, and you can't read it. So on my front page, you can go on the left-hand side, and under my stuff, you can view the full size of the logo, and you can read the mission statement of what we're all about and our cause.
I tell you what I'm going to do for you, Susie. I have a site called the Hooterville Gazette. I also have another one called Liberal Madness. And what we're going to do is we'll put some links there directly to your Facebook page so that people can find it very,
great.
Very easily. Yeah, if people will just come to – in fact, I'll put it on the main website. If people will come to HootervilleGazette.com, just like the old newspaper from Green Acres and Petticoat Junction and the Beverly Hillbillies, the HootervilleGazette.com, we will have that later this afternoon posted directly there, so you'll be able to go there and with one click of a button get to this particular cause. So, Susie, all I can say is God bless you for what you're doing. We have had three people on our show today who exhibit courage by taking a position that isn't necessarily so popular with everyone. You put yourself at risk, I'm sure, whenever you go to these funerals and protect the families. And I just want to thank you for what you and the members of your cause are doing.
I'm glad to get the word out there.
Oh, fantastic. And we're going to keep helping you get the word out. We want to have you back in a few weeks to let us know how things are going. I hope you've intimidated the Westbury Baptist Church to the point where they continue to no-show the funerals, and maybe we can move on to other issues in this country besides people interrupting military funerals in order to gain attention for themselves. Susie, once again, thanks for being here. I've enjoyed having you as a guest on the show. We are out of time, but we'll have you back real soon.
Well, thanks for contacting me. It was a real surprise, and I hope to talk to you again soon.
Well, I am a little surprised that you haven't received national media coverage for what you're doing. And as I told you in our private conversation, we'll try to take some steps to help you gain that as well.
Wonderful. We'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that will wrap it up for the Tea Party Power Hour. I do have one announcement that comes from Omaha, Nebraska. The Americans for Prosperity and the Nebraska Taxpayers for Freedom, as well as the Conservative Coalition of Nebraska, they're the people that sponsor the Tea Parties in that area, are holding a vigil every Thursday in front of Senator Ben Cornhusker Kickback Nelson's office. They've been doing this for over a year. Again, this takes place every Thursday at noon in front of Ben Nelson's office, and they're still going strong with this. And if you are one of our listeners in the Omaha, Nebraska area and you would like to participate in this, you need do nothing other than show up at the site, and they will inform you and give you more information once you arrive. And that comes to us from David West of Omaha, Nebraska. I want to thank you for joining us today for the Tea Party Power Hour. We look forward to having everyone back next week, Saturday, 10 a.m. Central, 11 a.m. Eastern Time, please forward the link to the show to your friends and encourage your friends to become regular listeners. You can subscribe to the Tea Party Power Hour via RSS feed as well as iTunes, and we encourage you to do that as well. Thank you very much. That's our show for today.